now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Tara Fraser. The lovely Martin brings us a double this week.
First off, he's been speaking to Brian Capron of Grange Hill and Blake 7 fame.
Sounds amazing. And then later, he'll be chatting to Tommy Knight, not about Waterloo Road or the Sarah Jane Adventures, but about glue. Sounds a bit sticky.
Oh, yeah. all that and more today here on Shout Out. Oh my God, there's a song. Hello.
Hello.
How are we all?
I'm fabulous because somebody cooked me dinner this evening and it wasn't me. So
me too.
What are you trying to say?
That you can't cook.
Wow.
It was very nice vegetarian dish.
It was. It not? Yes, it was lovely. Cooked by our very own Andy Shilton.
Miso, mushroom and spinach pasta. Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Very delicious.
Bellissimo. I thought you only cooked meat.
I like meat.
Okay.
But I can not eat meat.
Okay.
I shrooms instead, which are a bit meaty, especially when you add miso in it.
They are.
They have that, what's the word, umami?
Umami.
Yeah. Umami.
Absolutely.
Flavor.
Yeah, it's delicious. No, I'm very good, thank you.
No, I bet you were really horrible and didn't text Steph and say you were eating. So she's done dinner for you. And you forgot to tell her that you ate.
Sorry, Steph. Have you cooked?
Do you call putting a 2-minute rice in the microwave and chucking a tin of macaroni?
Considering
over the
I
top?
Don't eat fish, no, I don't. But I'm glad you've had something warm.
So
that's
a
what matters.
A cheeky McDonald's on the way back?
Probably. Yeah. Where I get sent in to get the fillet of fish.
All right.
Yeah. It's my favourite way to end a Thursday evening. She knows me so well.
Welcome to Life Outside, shout out.
I'm not really worried about the fillet of fish. The most important thing is the apple pie. Yeah. Second important
chocolate
is
milkshake.
The chocolate milkshake.
Oh. So.
Creatures,
but the machines never work. They're forever broken.
They do. Amazing.
Depends on the McDonald's you go to. Yeah,
it does. Yeah.
There's even an official thing about it because the company that owned the machines or something charged so much for the part that keeps breaking all the time.
They get to clean down and they want to do it early.
Yeah.
So after 9 o'clock, you're pushing your luck. But serious question: do you like to dip your chips in the milkshake or not?
Not since I was about 8.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Me neither. Anyway, moving on. It's disgusting.
They've got the McRib on special.
They have.
It's back.
Yeah.
Because it was a thing for a while, and then it went, and now it's back. Yeah.
It hasn't been around for about 15 years.
Yeah, been a long time.
Yeah.
Now, this is a tenuous link because we are an LGBTQ magazine show. So
rather than a food
gay people do eat McDonald's, so that's the link.
Wait, what?
Some gay people do. Not all.
And there are other places.
And other fast food restaurants are available.
Yeah, I know.
Especially in Bristol.
Food is amazing.
You were being a traitor and going to KFC, weren't you? You're Bristolian. You've got to go Miss Millie's. That's always a big debate here, isn't it?
That's what I've been told, yes. Yes.
Yeah, but there are so many options for food in Bristol.
There are some wonderful independent ones as well.
It's Cafe Kino.
I should point out some very nice restaurants too. You don't have to do fast food.
Owies.
Oh,
no.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, some good places.
You call it Owies, do you? We call it Ooey.
Ooey.
Oh, right. Owie. I'm just Scottish, you see.
Owie
is a sore point on your body.
That's right. Owie.
There's some nice places in Medway, Frome, Glastonbury, Swansea. London. Where else?
If you were going to have a last meal, what do you think your meal would be?
I think about this a strange.
Will you?
Yeah.
What would your last meal be? Your perfect final meal before they strap you in the chair?
Oh, it's got to be the Waitrose vegan steaks with peppercorn sauce, and peas, and chips.
Steph's not thought about this at all. Can you tell?
Just give me the whiskey.
Mine is an ooey vegan KFC bucket.
All right, okay.
With macaroni cheese on the side. Yorkshire puddings.
How could it be ooey in KFC?
Ooey, the vegan KFC place in Bristol have created their own version.
I know ooey have got one, haven't they?
Yeah, ooey. What did I say?
Uwe KFC.
Yeah, that's what companies. I call it. I call it Uwe. Okay, I realise that I've only ever said that internally. So in my head.
Strange place.
These things I keep to myself.
Stay out of there.
Yeah. But it's the vegan version of KFC. So that's what I would have.
A bit like Adventure Time.
And a creme brulee.
Creme brulee. Pretty much. So it would have to be some kind of steak for me. I love my steak.
Yeah.
So.
With this nice sauce. And
nice, like Chateaubriand or something.
Chateaubriand.
Yeah. It's very, very
filet mignon.
Filet mignon.
I love filet. Well, I used to love filet mignon. It's now Waitrose Vegan Steaks.
Yeah. Which are winning awards.
They are,
and
because
Sainsbury's have just bought the rights.
I don't get how they do it like they do.
No, I don't.
The texture.
It's confusing.
The taste. Mm-hmm. I keep having to look at the pack.
Make sure it's not me.
Yeah.
Well. I had to pull the packaging out of the bin. To make sure.
To double check.
Yeah. But we're safe. What would you have, Terry?
It's kind of a subject that would be good for next week with Halloween, wouldn't it?
Homemade lasagna.
Amazing. Ooh. Garfield's number one choice.
Yeah, Garfield's favourite choice.
I did not know that.
What's that?
That was Garfield's number one
choice. Oh, Garfield loves lasagna.
Yeah, that's lasagna.
Yeah. What other things would you expect a cat to favourite as their...
Well, I would have thought fish of some description. Wouldn't you?
Oh, mouse.
Yeah.
So wrong.
Mouse flavoured.
And you, Andy, what would you have?
That were a roast dinner or something. Oh, an owie.
I would have a nice steak with some haggis on the top.
I would have guessed haggis. That's what I was
thinking. I think that's nice. So cruel, because those haggis, they're so cute.
Batter them over the head.
Hey, haggis.
Yeah, and can you kill those poor little buggers and eat them?
Yeah, when I go home, you can get them deep fried.
Oh,
haggis. My God, they're not bad enough for you, is it?
You get pizza deep fried if you want.
Yeah. I've never had a deep fat fried Mars bar. Apparently, they're amazing.
Yes,
they do them at some fish and chip shops in Bristol.
Yeah, they do.
Incredible.
Yeah, you can deep fried ice cream if you want to.
Has everyone got their pumpkins for next week, by the way? We are broadcasting on Halloween.
We are.
What, to bring them
in? Hallows Eve.
Are we bringing them into the show?
Or so
are we having a pumpkin
competition? Competition.
Okay. Right.
We'll make you do the news with a pumpkin on your head.
Okay. Oh, I tell you what the listeners will love. If we all make up and dress up for Halloween.
Yeah.
How will they know that?
We've got magic microphones. You know that, Andy.
We could just tell them, you know,
text.
That we are.
We look like something. Yes. They never
Instagram.
Know.
Instagram?
So, yeah, I suppose.
We could gram it. Yeah.
You are so naive.
I don't actually know what I would dress up. Last year I dressed up as Edward Cullen and it took about a week to get that glitter off my face. So I'm not doing that again.
Well, next week we're talking to an actor who was in Hellraiser.
Yes.
Well, that'd be
remember
very
the
interesting.
80s? Yes. 80s film. We've got a feature length one with him. So lovely guy. It was great to get. And of course I remember Hellraiser when I was a kid. It scared the living daylights out of me. Watched it again recently, I just laughed. Which is not a reflection on the film. Just I was laughing at the bits that scared me last time, going, how did that scare me? But then it's because technology's moved on so far.
Of course.
And you'll also be standing by because we'll be holding a seance and trying to get through to someone who is beyond.
Oh, it's definitely
maybe JK
be
Rowling.
untouchable, that one.
We could have a contact with Deborah O'Karma.
She's not
in the dungeons under the Mersey, couldn't we?
I reckon she'd be up for it.
I reckon.
Yeah. She's probably feeling quite lonely.
It's a different
down there
show, I know, but
it's all right. There can be a crossover, and not just
anyway,
one from the other side.
Well, should we hand over to Mr. Spilacy, the lovely Martin?
I'm looking forward to this. Yes.
So, and he gave us a bit of an intro to this one as well. It says, "Who or what could possibly link a lovable teacher from Grange Hill, an intergalactic space traveller in Blake 7, a wartime prime minister, a radio sleuth, and one of the country's best loved serial killers?" Well, the answer is, of course, one man, Brian Capron, who's graced the screens for over 40 years in so many guises, but also who's trodden the boards on the odd occasion too, such as when he appeared as the narrator in the Rocky Horror Show. I didn't know that. Martin Spilacy from Nostalgia Ain't What It Used To Be caught up with him recently in Monmouth, where he asked Brian all about the show and, of course, his most famous role in Coronation Street. Have a listen to this.
Thank you. I'm going to mention, because we talked about Christopher Biggins, you also did the Rocky Horror Show on stage, didn't you?
Oh, mate, oh, I loved it. The Rocky Horror Show, because it's another story, but after Corrie, I did Where the Heart Is for 3 years, and it was very successful, and they were going to do another series because they thought the viewing figures were very good, and then suddenly, and also, I just finished a series, and Rocky Horror said, would you like to do 3 weeks as the narrator? And I thought, I'll lend my services to the stage for 3 weeks, and I'll swan back to my series. Halfway through doing Rocky Horror, which I loved, my agent said, just had the casting director for Where the Heart Is on. She'd been crying down the phone. They're cancelling the series because they were going to bring in Downton Abbey, which we didn't know then. And so I thought, oh, my God, what am I going to do? And Rocky Horror said, do you like doing this? I said, yes. They said, would you want to carry on? Do you want to take it into the West End? I said, yeah. And I carried on doing it for 6 months. Then after that, they said, do you want to do Guys and Dolls, the Michael Grandage one? You'll have to audition for him. And I did. So then I did Guys and Dolls. And suddenly, it almost did me a favour. I'd never done a musical in my life because I'm not a singer-dancer, but I can put a song across. And suddenly I had a whole new string to my career. So over the last few years, I've done lots of musicals where they needed a character actor. And also when I'm doing panto, I also sing as well, which I never used to. So in a way, it did me a favour, and I've done some lovely music. And to do Guys and Dolls, Claire Sweeney, you know, with Claire Sweeney, I mean, it was just fantastic. So in a way, that turned out really well for me. And Rocky Horror, I loved it. And often when someone dropped out or was ill, they'd ring, call me up and say, oh, Brian, can you just fill in for the night, you know, or next week or something. I love Rocky Horror. Is a very, very special one. And it had been redirected at that point because it was getting a bit pantomimic. So I was lucky to be in the kind of new version. I was actually telling Fraser Hines, who's in this show, on the way up here, when I first did it, when they redirected it, the first person who played the narrator was Michael Aspel in the West End. And they showed me the DVD to give me an idea of how to play it. And he was off at one point, and it was brilliant because I could use the same excuse. And there was a big silence, and suddenly he just wandered on very casually and said, I'm sorry about that. I was just having a cigarette out the back. And it happened to me one night. I thought, oh, great, I can use that. And I said the same. They just laughed, you know, so it was great. Because when I did Rocky Horror, it was right after Corrie. And I used to walk on, and they just used to boo and boo. And I used to go, thank you very much. If I may, and they go, you may. And then I just used to open the book and carry on. But it's a lovely show. Very good memories of that.
And, of course, singing. You've sung in Abbey Road, haven't you, with the Royal Philharmonic?
Blimey, you know your stuff. Not many people know that. Yeah, that was, well, of course, I was in the ill-fated Coronation Street musical, but the music was actually very, very good. And the producer of Coronation Street, Kieran Roberts, rang me up and he said, look, they've written this song for you. Would you be interested? I said, I don't want anything to do with Richard Hillman anymore. And he said, I said, listen to this song, it's so good, you know. So he sent me a dummy thing through and I thought, blimey, that's good. I went to Abbey Road, Royal Philharmonic, and I think the finished article is not bad. I mean, it's a fantastic song and real tongue-in-cheek, but beautifully written, and I loved doing it. And then subsequently we did the musical, and that's the longest story from hell, but the ill-fated Corrie music, which actually could have been fantastic, but for a number of reasons it fell through. We had Paul O'Grady in it, and It was so sad because the music was fabulous, but it just needed a bit more direction, and the producers were, I don't know, have kind of ratted out on us, I think. And I'm still owed some money from that, by the way. I didn't get paid a penny, not a penny.
Not good.
But the PR person from Corrie was lovely. She knew I hadn't been paid, so she made sure I went up to the street for 3 years doing Halloween on a night and getting a nice little bit of money for doing that, made up for it, bless her.
You've probably never been asked about this, but we will touch on Corrie if that's okay, because you did have the dream part, and I think you are you basically, your storyline saved the show, didn't it?
Well, I'd been in it for about 6 months, and the character was slightly cheesy, I think, and everyone was saying I was going to get sacked, along with Sally Lindsay and a few other people. And then they sacked the producer, brought in a new executive producer, Carolyn Reynolds, and they brought in Kieran Roberts from Emmerdale, who just won a BAFTA. They knew the show, and they made some fantastic decisions. And for some reason, they kind of honed in, they saw something in my character, And also they brought back writers who left Disenchanted, and they brought in new writers. And one of those new writers was called John Fay, and he was from Brookside, and he'd been a poet. And you don't really take much notice of the writing because you're just learning. And I started to notice the writing. I thought, who's writing this? And it was this guy, John Fay, who was, I think, majorly responsible for a lot of the twists and turns and the fabulous part. I mean, it was just extraordinary. I mean, what am I doing in it? I'm not even a northerner, do you know what I mean? It's just the illogicality of this profession is extraordinary. And of course, I'd been in it before in the 80s, yes. And I'd played a nice middle-class social worker. So I didn't think they'd want me in it. So I was so lucky to get the part. And that bit of serendipity where everything came together for me was just terrific. The twists and turns in the story. And they made a Longburn storyline. Because up before that, EastEnders was winning everything. Mm. And they didn't take the awards seriously, but they aimed this at the awards. And we cleaned up that night. I'm very, very fortunate. It was a very exciting time. And, the character seems to live on.
Well, tell me, what's underwater acting like?
Well, of course, that was a first. I mean, that had never been done before in a soap. When they first told me, I found out about 3 months before what my demise was, and they said, "Oh, you're going to die in a canal." And I thought, how boring, you know. And then, of course, they got in a James Bond's stunt team, and it was just terrific. And we used 5 cars for it. And we spent 3 days in a water tank for the in Fleetwood, where they train pilots if they're downed in the North Sea. And so that's when we had 2 cars underwater, and we had to learn how to be underwater, which is very exciting because you're there and you're strapped down and you're weighted down and you breathe this apparatus last minute, throw it away, and they count down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 on your fingers and action. And you do it, start acting underwater. But it was beautifully directed. Tim Dowd, the director, did a wonderful job on it because you really felt that car lifting in the air with us all in it, where we weren't, of course, it was dummies and that bit. But it was beautifully done, and it's become quite an iconic scene, and I've been very lucky to be part of it.
I can't listen to the Wannadies without thinking of that music, you know, and that scene.
Because I didn't know that till it came out. Nobody told me that was going to be played, you know, so I didn't know at all. So that was all put in afterwards. But it was very clever, as you say, that's become parcel and part of it.
Do you think I can forgive what you've done?
The Shout Out Podcast.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Tiesto and the business. It's a...
I'm ready to get down to news business.
Me too.
Let's get I like down that song. Business. It's nice. I don't like you guys just like rocking away.
Oh, yeah. I was dad dancing in my seat.
Dad dancing.
Yeah, wiggling my fingers, bopping my head.
Rolling my shoulder.
Yeah, doing my best pigeon impression.
In case you didn't notice, Tara was looking down on you as if to say, honestly, young people.
Young? Big 4-0.
It's all relative. Yeah. I'm still young.
I'm a totally different age to as well. I mean,
yeah, 44. And Andy. Well, actually, I'm still the youngest, aren't I?
Yes.
Yeah. Forever.
Shush now.
Okay. Sorry.
This is going to be... I don't think this is, we've ever done the news
no,
for three
I
before,
don't
have
believe we?
We
have.
So we've done it with donuts in mouths and...
Wow, okay.
We did once, Christmas, yeah. Yes. But now we're going to be like the news at 10 from now on. We're going to be 3 reporters.
Really? I have a funny feeling with Halloween next week, it might not be quite so serious.
Well, we'll just have to see.
Anyway, let's get some news headlines.
This is Shout Out News. Welcome along.
BBC Radio Bristol and ITV West Country News report that the local council in Chippenham has voted to come off the social media platform formerly known as Twitter, even as its far-right-wing owner Elon Musk spends billions to interfere with the American presidential election. The council reports that the values of Mr. Musk do not match with those of the authority which aims to treat all citizens fairly and equally. Many people, institutions, and private companies have already severed ties with the website over the interference of its owner in many issues. Musk is a transphobe and homophobe, and is considered by many to be the archetypal gamin. That is, a privileged white male angry at the rights and concerns of all and any minorities.
Nick Fish of the American Atheist Association has described many of the backers of Donald Trump and associated politicians as hallucinating homophobes and Christian nationalists. Mr. Fish warns many of the Trumpist organizers are self-proclaimed prophets and apostles of the charismatic New Apostolic Reformation movement, which seeks Christian dominion over the seven mountains of society, namely government, education, media, arts and entertainment, business, family and religion. Their leaders claim God speaks to them in dreams and visions, and they preach that the US is in the midst of a spiritual war between good, like-minded Christians and evil, demonic everybody else. He said, "I don't want us to become desensitized to this kind of rhetoric. It is alarming to know the person who is just two steps away from the presidency wishes he could share a stage with hallucinating homophobes. You know, it's not normal for a presidential candidate to demand major broadcasters have their licenses revoked, or that it's okay for him to suggest the military be deployed against political opponents. It's nuts that so many people believe that person was chosen by God for a divine mission. The election, now just 15 days away, is shaping up to be as close as it will be constitutional," he said.
Pink News reports that Claudia De La Cruz, standing for US president for the small leftist party PSL, is a fringe ticket, but her appeal to rationalist politics and against the far-right demagogues who threaten US democracy itself might just go down well with LGBTQIA plus people. Pink News chats with her as part of their coverage of the US elections. She pledges to support reparations for Black Americans, a single-payer healthcare system, and an end-all US economic aid to Israel. She has given a speech at the pro-Palestine protest outside of the White House. She has vowed to forgive all student loan debt, fully recognise Native American sovereignty, and honour treaty rights, cut the US military budget by 90%, expand public transport, and use taxation to eliminate billionaires. De La Cruz and left-wing running mate Karina Garcia told the UK liberal paper The Guardian that they were comprehensively behind LGBTQI plus voters, with the paper saying the candidates have also promised to repeal Don't Say Gay laws and ensure that schools are a supportive place for LGBTQI plus youth, where all students are treated with respect and dignity. To repeal legislation that criminalises trans youth and any transgender people seeking gender-affirming healthcare services, which they said cynically calculate to create an atmosphere of hatred in society. And finally, they aim to combat hate crimes by ending impunity for perpetrators of violence and initiating a massive public education campaign to counter the lies spread by the bigoted right wing.
The gay and bi men's magazine from the Antipodes, DNA, carries an in-depth report on the fact that business pressure on rogue homophobic state Uganda has grown and is costing the bigoted society dearly. DNA says Uganda's hateful Anti-Homosexuality Act, the AHA, has drained up to $1.6 billion already from the country's coffers in just 1 year, according to a report by LGBTQ Nation. The president signed the law in May 2023, making aggravated homosexuality punishable by death. The global backlash has been swift and severe. In January, the United States booted Uganda from the African Growth and Opportunity Act, slamming the door on duty-free exports. The World Bank also froze new loans last August. This aid suspension alone could bleed Uganda of $276 to $1,024 million per year. Uganda's global reputation remains in tatters. The country may lose up to $99 million in tourism alone annually. LGBTQIA workers struggling with their mental health are less productive, costing $23 to $58 million per year. Ugandan LGBTQIA plus advocates are urging the government to, quote, take immediate action to repeal the AHA in its entirety. They say the anxiety within the investment and general general business community is undeniable. Uganda's Supreme Court, they say, must do the right thing and annul this apartheid law.
New Ways Ministry, which has been building bridges between LGBTQIA communities and the Roman Catholic Church since 1977, says that LGBTQ plus Catholics took part in a panel discussion in Rome at the same time as the Catholic General Synod. Outreach, a Jesuit-sponsored LGBTQ ministry, and American media co-hosted the event, titled What is the Experience of LGBTQ Catholics, on Tuesday near the Vatican. The 40 or so attendees included synod delegates and participants, as well as a panel of 5 lesbian, gay, or bisexual Catholics. Also in attendance were representatives from New Ways Ministry and Dignity USA, a national Catholic LGBTQ plus organization. I've learned that the faith and identity are not mutually exclusive, and that God's love is wide enough to encompass every part of me, one delegate said. For anyone facing the same struggles, know that you are not alone, and that both your faith and your identity are sacred.
Free online magazine Forever with Pride have just published their first Christmas catalogue, showcasing just a few of the many LGBTQI plus owned and operated businesses you could be spending your Christmas shopping money with this year. To download the catalogue, just visit foreverwithpride.com, and do remember to check out secondhand, charity, eco-friendly and community-run businesses in your area for the best in festive ethical shopping.
And finally, in sports news, a soccer team consisting entirely of transgender men has made its debut in a regional league in Spain. They have overcome administrative challenges and prejudices to become the first all-trans squad to achieve federated status in Europe. The team is named Phoenix FC after the mythical bird which symbolises rebirth. And they've played some friendlies and 7-a-side games last season, but now they have grown to compete in their 5th tier of the northwestern region of Catalonia after being incorporated into a local club in the Barcelona suburb of San Feliu de Llobregat.
And that's it for this week. There is more LGBTQI plus news at our website, which you can visit at any time at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr,
Ezra Peregrine,
Lisa Loder.
Shout Out News,
national and international LGBT news for you.
Shout Out,
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
There you go. I had it on my screen. I just moved it. I Like It by Alesso and Nate Smith. Martin's back again. He's got a two-part from him this week, which is lovely.
He's
been very busy, hasn't he? A couple of weeks ago, the Daily Mail ran an article about 5 most influential teen dramas of all time. And on that list was a Channel 4 programme called Glue. I hadn't heard of it. I don't know if you had.
No, I did a bit of searching on it. Yeah, interesting.
Martin Spalacy from the lovely show Nostalgia Ain't What It Used to Be, doesn't read Daily Mail, and that doesn't surprise me at all. But he was fascinated by the article, as he's long thought Glue was one of the best dramas of the last 20 years. As he happened to be going to Derby, where he knew one of the actors from Glue was appearing at a convention, he asked Tommy Knight to take a few moments out of his busy schedule to chat to the programme, and also his time on shows like Waterloo Road and the Sarah Jane Events, if you remember that. So have a listen to this.
Dear Erudite listeners, you find me in the Quad in Derby in a Doctor Who convention with a star of Victoria of Sarah Jane Adventures, Doctor Who.
Waterloo Road,
but I don't want to talk about any of that.
Victoria.
I don't want to talk about any of that.
No.
I want to talk to, it's Tommy Knight, by the way. Tommy Knight. I'm going to talk to him about something called Glue.
Glue.
Tell me about Glue.
So Glue was a interesting drama written by Jack Thorne, who did write the original series of skins, didn't he? Yeah, yeah. Fantastic writer, awesome guy, great mind. And he wrote a sort of murder mystery based around the death of my character. We filmed it over a couple of weeks. It had a phenomenal cast. I had a lot of fun, and I was drowned in mud for it, which is, quite an experience.
We shouldn't really give too many spoilers because I want people to go out and watch the series. But it's an ideal part for an actor, isn't it? Because basically, when you're not in it, they're all talking about
it. Yeah, yeah, pretty much that, yeah. I felt like I was constantly there in the background, like filming, but at the same time, like it being the murder mystery about you, like didn't have enough. I needed to do more filming during age, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and you died in the first episode. I don't think that's giving too much away, but that doesn't mean you're not in any of the other episodes. Yeah. I think you get away lightly. Some of the people who live go through far worse things than you did.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I guess, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't recommend it to anyone being drowned in the mud. I'll try not to give too much else away, but you can say he did have a tragic life and a poor time with the time he had.
And there were some little known people that were appeared in the series. I don't know if they've gone on to do any other things. People like Phoebe Waller-Bridge, does she do anything these days?
Yeah, I think the entire cast. I mean, here's what, when I was filming it, I was constantly feeling like I was out of my element. Like the depth of the quality of the actors around me. I think I always had myself as a bit of an imposter syndrome, like working. I wasn't like professionally trained, like really. It was like I'd just like gone from job to job. And I was suddenly working with all of these actors who were like fresh out of drama school, who had like learned how to study. They knew the names of different types of acting, and I was always a bit like, oh, I just read my lines and pull a face. Do you know what I mean? And so I was. It was really an eye opening job for me to see I had a lot of discussions about acting while doing that job, and so I learned a lot from the guys who had just come out of studying drama, doing it. And I was just honestly just floored by the talent of the rest of the cast in it, everyone.
I'm going to beg to differ, because I think your performance was stunning. It wasn't an easy part to play. And of course, one of your colleagues in it was Yasmin, who you'd worked with on the Sarah Jane Adventures. Yeah. Now, I don't know if you want to talk about this, but you did tell me earlier on about a little scene you had together. Yeah. Are you prepared to spill the beans?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I know I've got plenty of beans to spill. Yasmin and I worked together when I was 13 years old. Yeah, but 13, when we started filming the Sarah Jane Adventures. And then it had been a couple of years since we'd worked together, and then we came together again on Glue. And the first scene that we had together was the autopsy scene, where I am stark bollock naked on a slab of metal being cut open by the coroner. Is that the coroner? Is that the person who does the autopsy?
Mortician.
Yeah, yeah. Being cut open by a person. So I was... gladly, I was stuck completely butt naked, and you can see me full frontal nudity, well, kind of full frontal nudity on Channel 4, which I'm quite proud of. A little claim to fame for myself. But for that day, where Yaz and I were childhood friends, she couldn't look me in the eye.
Well, I'm sure she could look you in the eye.
Not that eye.
Oh, I see. And I have, eyes. And I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, if you are wondering, Tommy does have a big part in that production.
Thank you. What a compliment.
You're very welcome, sir. How did you get the part?
For Glue. Well, as an actor, we have an agent, and the agent gives you a call and says, here's a script, do you want to read it? You go ahead and you go, turn up this time, this place, read the lines, and fingers crossed you get the part. It was just one of hundreds of auditions. Wasn't expecting, as always, I try not to expect anything out of it. Most of the job of acting is auditioning. That's like the primary thing that you'll spend your time doing, is trying out a new script, a new script, a new script, a new script, and then once in a blue moon you get lucky. And I tried to never expect it, the job. So I turned up, I read my lines, forgot about it, and then a few weeks later you get a phone call and you go, would you like to be a part of this Jack Thorne series which is being written? And what was great is the entire cast and crew, we didn't get the last episode until we filmed it. So none of us knew the solution to the murder mystery. None of us knew how it ended until we started filming it.
Wow.
Which was just brilliant. Like, that was Jack's thing. He was like, I don't want anyone to know. I don't want to give anything away in any performance. I don't want anything of that sort. So I thought, masterfully done. And great show. I had so much fun doing it. Like, really, really. Yeah,
and you got to kiss Billy Howell as well.
And I got to kiss Billy Howell. We were running through the woods.